Third Narrative, contributed by Franklin Blake. Chapter 1. In the spring of 1849, while I was travelling in Central Asia, I sent a servant to fetch my letters and money from the nearest British embassy. He returned with a letter from Mr. Brough. He advised me to return home immediately. My father had died. Although I had put half the world between me and Rachel, I failed to forget her. The nearer I got to England, and to the possibility of seeing her, the more I felt her hold on my heart tightening again. She was the first person I asked after when Mr. Brough met me at the station. He told me she was living with a sister of the late Sir John Linder, in Portland Place, London. Half an hour later, I was on my way there. The servant who answered the door wasn't sure whether Miss Verinder was at home or not. I sent him upstairs with my card. He came down again and informed me that she was out. I said I would call again at 6 p.m. That evening I told again that she was not at home. It's clear. She did not wish to see me. My servant took a letter to her the next day, with instructions to wait for an answer. There was none. That afternoon, after Mr. Brough had told me of the events since my departure, I felt even more determined to find out the secret of her silence towards her mother and her cruel behaviour towards me. I decided to take the next train to Yorkshire. If it was humanly possible, I would find the thief who took the moonstone. There I was, standing on the familiar terrace, just before sunset that evening. I walked round to the back of the peaceful old house. I saw Gerald Betteridge in his chair with his pipe. "Mr. Franklin," he exclaimed, and struggled to his feet. He shook his head regretfully. "You still owe me halfpenny." He invited me inside. I had to refuse. The house was Rachel's now. He was understandably disappointed. "I had hoped things might have smoothed themselves over between you two," he said. I took him by the arm. "It's a lovely evening," I said. "I'll walk to Frissinghall and stay at the hotel." "What brings you here, sir?" he asked. "The moonstone," I replied. He looked at me curiously, appearing to wonder whether this was a joke. "I intend to find out who took it," I said. He became very serious. "Now you listen to me," he said. "You leave that evil diamond alone. Don't waste your time in it. How can you hope to succeed where the great cuff failed?" I told him my mind was made up. I knew last year that the diamond was at the bottom of Rachel's dramatic change in attitude towards me. I knew it still was. "But don't you feel afraid, sir?" he inquired. "About what you might possibly find out about Miss Rachel, concerning her secret?" "I'm as certain of her as you are," I said. "Knowing her secret won't change my love for her." Reassured, he said, "And I can tell you, sir, you may not have far to look." I stared at him in the gathering darkness. "Our poor Rosanna left a letter behind her, addressed to you. Limping Lucy, is it, sir? She wouldn't give it to anyone except you. It was too late. You'd already left England. We'll go to the fishing village, sir, first thing tomorrow."